Chumash Bereishis is moving forward at its regular pace, and we are doing our best to keep up. And we come to the Parsha of Toldos, dealing, of course, with, as its name suggests, Toldos Yitzchak. The children, first and foremost, the children of Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Esav. And as we know, Yitzchak and Rivka are married for a while without children. And Pasuk Kaf Aleph describes their prayers for children. Pasuk Perek Kaf Hei, Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Vayetar Yitzchak Lashem Benochach Ishto. So Yitzchak, Vayetar, I think the correct translation is he entreated Hashem, he prayed intensely. Lenochach Ishto, opposite his wife, Kiakarahi, she was barren. Vayosel Hashem, and Hashem was entreated by him. Vatar Rivka Ishto, and Rivka conceives. And there is a very interesting Rashi, I think it's a well-known Rashi, but it's not so easy to understand. Firstly, Rashi explains Lenochach Ishto, opposite his wife, Rashi describes Ze omid bezovis zo umispalel. He's standing in this corner and davening. Zo omid bezovis zo umispalel. She's standing in this corner and davening. Okay, the nochach ishto. It's an interesting arrangement. They're not side by side. Each one from the corner and daven. But the pasuk does say, "Vayoser lo Hashem." Hashem received Yitzhak's prayers. Now, according to Rashi, they're both davening. The Pasuk doesn't say that Rivka was davening. The Pasuk says that he davened lenochach ishto. But Rashi has explained that lenochach ishto means that they're both really davening. And yet, the Pasuk emphasizes vayoser lo Hashem, that Hashem hears and accepts Yitzchak's prayers. What does that mean? What are the implications for Rivka's prayers? And Rashi notes this. Vayoser lo, velo la. Hashem receives Yitzchak's prayers and not Rivka's prayers. Why? Rashi explains from the Medrash, she'ein adom tfilas tzadik ben rasha letfilas tzadik ben tzadik. You cannot compare the prayers of a righteous person who's the son of a wicked person to a righteous person, the son of a righteous person. Lefichach lo velo la. Therefore, it was to him and not to her. Hashem heard his prayers and not her prayers. And as we can appreciate, the Mefarshim are bothered by a couple of things. Firstly, they're both davening for the same thing, which means that we have to assume that their tefillahs combined or corroborate each other, which means it makes it all the more remarkable that Hashem accepts Yitzchak's prayers and not hers. I mean, maybe they're both together. Does it mean to say that Yitzchak's prayers alone would have been enough? I mean, at the end of the day, they're combining, they're teaming up to daven for the same thing. So it's very unusual that the Pasuk almost makes a point of shutting out Rivka's prayers. They're both davening for the same thing, but when it happens, you should know that it's because of Yitzchak's prayers and not because of Rivka's prayers. That's what are we meant to make of this information? Especially as, what is the lesson? What's the moral of the story? You cannot compare the tefillah of a tzaddik ben Rasha to a tzaddik ben tzaddik. She's a tzaddik ben Rasha, a tzaddik is ben Rasha, and he's a tzaddik ben tzaddik. Incomparable? They cannot be compared at all? Even if one says that the tzaddik ben tzaddik has some form of edge, advantage, or whatever you'd call it over tzaddik ben Rasha, but you cannot compare them? What's a tzaddik ben Rasha meant to do? Ever? It sounds like their prayers won't be received because they're not a tzaddik ben tzaddik. And this doesn't seem to go well together with the idea that actually a tzaddik ben Rasha, someone who's comes from a not such a good place, but nonetheless rises above their circumstance, Well, they, in many respects, they get more credit than the tzaddik, ben tzaddik. We're mindful of the famous statement in the Gemara, it is a machlokas, but machlokas means there's two sides. The mokum shebali tshuva owned him, in a place where a person who comes from a bad background to a good background, tzaddikim geburim einam owned him, even perfectly righteous people cannot stand. Now there, it's a little different because it's the person's own personal background. Here it's his family background. But nonetheless, presumably, the idea is very similar. In other words, if you have someone who he grows up in the house of a tzaddik, so of course anything can happen, but if things work out well, from a certain point of view, he had a lot of support. Someone who had no support, nonetheless, they're self-made, so they get significantly more credit for that. So why does that work against them when it comes to davening? So these are very basic but important questions with regards to this Rashi, and there's many approaches to the Rashi, but something that really I found captivating is in the writings, or more correctly, in the recorded comments of the Kotzker Rebbe. There are one or two collections of the comments of the Kotzker Rebbe. This one is called, there's one called Emes Ve'Emuna, and this one is the second one, the name eludes me just momentarily, but I think if there's anything in our experience with the Kotzker Rebbe we can say with certainty and confidence is that impossible to know what he's going to say about anything. One has to be ready for just about any eventuality. But the Kotzker Rebbe comes in and he says that we need to understand that when the Pasuk says Vayetar Yitzchak, back to the beginning of Pasuk Kaf Aleph, it's a big chiddush what he says. And in fact, the way that I'd like to discuss it is based on the way that it was developed in a sefer called Ner Uziel by someone called Rav Uziel Milevsky. It's actually written in English. And it's a really outstanding sefer. It is unpardonably not in print. But Vayetar Yitzchak Lashem Lenochach Ishto, Yitzchak davens to Hashem lenochach ishto, opposite his wife. What does that mean, opposite his wife? Well, Rashi explained, he's in this corner, she's in that corner, so I guess in terms of angles or however the geometrically they're opposite to each other. But the Kotzker Rebbe says that actually he was davening lenochach ishto, opposite her, because they were both asking for different things. For opposing things. Their tefillahs were lenochach. They were in opposition to a degree to each other. How could that be? Are they not both davening that him and Rivka should have a child? Yes, they are. But the question is, what type of child should that be? What's the best type of child that a person should be davening for? And each one was asking and davening in light of their own experience. And their experiences were quite different from each other. They both emerged as great tzaddikim, indescribably so, Yitzchak and Rivka. But Yitzchak has the benefit of being born into a family of tzaddikim. His father is Avram, and his mother is Sarah, and he has a great deal of support, and he used it, and he appreciates it, and he endorses that type of approach. And therefore, for their child, what Yitzchak would like is that the child should have all the best advantages, personally. And what does that mean? It means all the best inclinations, to be born with the best characteristics. Obviously, anything can happen, but to be born in an advantaged way and to take advantage of those things. Rivka has had a very different experience. Her background was horrific, with her parents and her brother, etc. She comes from, but she rose above it, and she sees great value in that. She sees great merit in that, and therefore Rivka is more embracing of adversity and of disadvantage, because if one can overcome that, it's a greater achievement, and therefore she is inclined to be davening for a son, maybe that everything shouldn't come so easily to him. Maybe he should have to work to overcome his negative characteristics, because she sees great virtue in that. And so, it turns out that when the Pasuk says Lenochach Ishto, they're both davening, but they're davening for different types of children. And in the end, the Pasuk says Vayosur Lo Hashem. When it says that Hashem heeded or accepted Yitzchak's prayers, it doesn't mean, as we previously understood, they're both happening for the same thing, but Hashem is only interested in listening to Yitzchak and not to Rivka. But to the extent that they're davening for different things, Hashem granted Yitzchak's request and not Rivka's, at least with regards to Yaakov. Because Yaakov comes out, Yaakov Ishtam. And in this regard, if you see how the Rebbe, the Kotzker Rebbe, reads when Rashi says, "Ein dome tfilas tzaddik ben Rasha, the tfilas tzaddik ben tzaddik," ein dome, it doesn't compare. So we understood that that's in a sense on a scale of effectiveness. It cannot compare in its effectiveness. But the Kotzker Rebbe says, "Ein dome" literally means it's not the same. The type of tefillah, or the thing that a tzaddik ben Rasha will be davening for, his tefillah is not dome. It's not similar to the tefillah of a tzaddik ben tzaddik. Because, as we said, they'll be davening for different characteristics and within the child. And between those two, at least with regards to Yaakov, Hashem heeded Yitzchak's prayers. And that's why it says, Vayoser lo Hashem. Between the two tefillahs, Hashem chose the tefillah of the tzaddik ben tzaddik and what he was asking for. Of course, as we know, and this comes out, it wasn't just one child that was within them. It was Esav also, and this then leads to the very interesting question as to whether somehow the merits of this birth were pooled, or would have been pooled, between the two children, to the degree that if Yaakov comes out Ishtam, so then maybe he took all the merits in the birth, leaving Esav with virtually nothing. And this the Kotzker Rebbe says and speculates. Could it be that if Yaakov had less than what he got in terms of the advantages of good qualities, etc., so maybe Esav would have gotten a little bit more. So there is that price to be paid, given the fact they both come out together. And this leads to many, many different other possibilities. Who knows if perhaps the reason why Yitzchak, it's impossible to say with any certainty, but just to ponder. I mean, Yitzchak, in a sense, his heart goes out to Esav. In his estimation, Esav is trying, and maybe he sees that because Hashem listened to his tefillah with regards to Yaakov, Esav has such a hard time, so Yitzchak gives him a bit of an easier time. I mean, these are all imponderables for us, but what are imponderables for, if not for pondering? So these are the fascinating comments of the Kotzker Rebbe on a very difficult Rashi. Of course, more to say on the Rashi Od Chazon Lamoed, but in the meanwhile, we continue. So, Vayisrotetu, moving on into Pasuk Kafes, Vayisrotetu Habonim Bikirba. What exactly does Vayisrotetu mean? It could be, Rashi gives a couple of interpretations. There was commotion, they were running. Rashi gives the famous... brings the famous medrash when Rivka would pass by Beis Avodah Zarah, so then Esau would be trying to break out when she'd pass by Pisrei Shem Ve'Aver, the halls of Shem Ve'Aver, so then Yaakov would be trying to get out. Some Mefarshim asked the question, what's she doing walking by the house of Avodah Zarah in the first place? That's not the type of place that a person should be going. But that, of course, is failing to remember that everywhere is a house of Avodah Zarah, effectively, aside from their house and Yeshiva Shem Ve'Aver. So it's either stay at home, or if you go, so then Esau was probably looking to break out a lot more than Yaakov was. And Rivka is quite bothered by this. It's very interesting, and I think it's worth mentioning, because there are certain phrases and concepts that we're quite familiar with, and just to see the nuances. Even the concept of the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver, and Rashi mentions this, it's a very enigmatic place, because, I mean, what did they learn there? What did the learning seder look like? And people spent many days, Yaakov would spend 14 years there. And that's even afterwards, and in his youth, he's also there. So clearly, there's some program that we don't know what it is. Either way, this Shem and Aver are mentioned a number of times within Rashi's Perush. But interestingly, they're never mentioned in exactly the same way. And especially as we're so familiar with the expression, the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver. That's like the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver. If we look closer, we'll see that that's actually an inaccurate expression, the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver. How so? Well, firstly, the first reference that Rashi's mentioned is in the one that we just quoted, where if she passes Overus al-Pisrei, pardon me, al-Pisrei Torah, Shem Ve'Aver, on the entrances of Torah of Shem Ve'Aver. That's an interesting expression. Pisrei Torah, Shem Ve'Aver. Okay. When she comes to inquire, which she does, Vatelech Lidrish as Hashem, she wants to find out what's happening. So Rashi explains, Vatelech Lidrish as Hashem, Lebeis Midrasha Shel Shem. She went to the Beis HaMedrash of Shem. So that's interesting, because as far as we knew, the Beis HaMedrash is the Yeshiva, or the Beis HaMedrash of Shem Ve'Aver. But Rashi calls it the Beis HaMedrash of Shem. Where did Aver go? But really, what emerges even more clearly from Rashi later on is that there was no yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver. There were two yeshivas, one of Shem and one of Aver. And how does this come out? Because in Pasuk Kaf Zayin, when it begins to describe the different ways that that the two sons would be, Vayigdalu Hana'arim, they grew up, Pasuk Kaf Zayin, Vayihi Esav Isha Deyatzayin Ish Sadeh, so Esav was the man of the field, and he was a person of entrapment, and so on and so forth. Vayakov Ish Tam, but Yaakov is a wholesome person, Yosheva Halim, he dwells in tents. Says Rashi, Ahala Shel Shem, but Ahala Shel Aver, the tent of Shem and the tent of Aver. Why does Rashi explain that the tents here of Shem and Aver? There's many reasons to live in a tent. However, as Mefarshi Rashi point out, there are many reasons to live in a tent, but you only ever need one tent. In other words, if we assume, even as a simple possibility, that maybe Yaakov was a shepherd, and therefore he dwells in tents as he moves around, that may well be, but all you need is one. And in fact, we go back to Parshas Bereishis, the very first shepherd is described as having his one tent. That's Yovel. And Yovel, Avi Yoshev Ohel Umikne. Right? He is the first one to dwell in the tent with his field. One tent is enough. But the Pasuk makes the point of saying that Yaakov was Yoshev Ohalim. More than one tent. But why would you need more than one tent to live in? The answer, says Rashi, is you don't. But you might have need more than one tent to learn in. And that's why it's specifically the plural of Aholim that leads us now not to the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver, but to the yeshivos of Shem and Aver. It's very interesting that that they had two yeshivas. Why would they have two yeshivas? We don't know. If we don't know what they learned in the yeshiva of Shem, how would we possibly know why Aver opened his own yeshiva? Was it a different learning style? We don't know. And perhaps it was just to cover more ground, or to attract more people. But Yaakov, interestingly, spent time in both. Yoshev HaHalim, sometimes in the Shiva of Shem, sometimes in the Shiva of Aver. So now we understand that when Rashi in the beginning talks about Pischei Torah Shel Shem Ve'Aver, it's literally the openings, because they were different premises. Shem's place, Aver's place. But to go back to why it was, therefore, when it says Vatelech Lidrashos Hashem, she wants to find out what's happening. So the pasuk says, so Rashi says she went to the Beis HaMedrash of Shem. Yes. In other words, it's the difference between if you're looking to absorb a method of learning, or if you're looking to get an answer to a particular shaila. Yaakov is involved in learning, and therefore he goes to the yeshiva of Shem to learn from him, to Aver to learn from him. Rivka is not going there to learn. She's going there to get the answer to her question. And therefore, she goes to the person who's most qualified. She's not interested in asking both of them. If Shem gives her the answer, then that's the answer. She's not going to go, and what does Aver say about this? She's happy with the answer from Shem. And that's why Rashi makes a point of saying the Beis Midrash Shel Shem. She's the first person to go to one place specifically and not the other. Interestingly, and just for as follow-up, and once again, to keep an eye on the accuracy, and which is always important, Yaakov, when he runs away from Esav, so he doesn't go straight away to Laban, as we know. The Gemara in Megillah, and Rashi quotes it, that makes the calculations, 14 years. And those 14 years, and where were they spent? So once again, in the Yeshiva of Shem Ve'Ever. But it's not so. Rashi says he spent those 14 years in the Yeshiva of Ever. So this is the first time that we find Ever is the one. Why not in the Yeshiva of Shem? Because Shem was no longer alive at that point. According to the Seder of the years, etc., Shem ben Noach died. I mean, he lived a good long life, but he died when Yaakov was at the age of 50. Yaakov, when he got the brachos, was 63, which means there's only one yeshiva left. That's the yeshiva of Ever, and that's where he went. So as we see, just a little bit more attention to detail to understand why each time which yeshiva is referenced, and maybe more than one yeshiva is each one for its purpose. But what is interesting, and a question, it's a basic question, disarmingly simple, that Mefarshei Rashi ask. Rivka doesn't know what's going on. We don't know if she knows that there's twins. She doesn't, and even her expression of her difficulties is also somewhat enigmatic. Pasuk Kaf Beis, Vayisrotetzu Habonim Bekirba. They cause commotion or they're running. Batoma Imkein Lama Ze Anochi. And she says, if so, why me? What is this me? It's a difficult phrase to understand. Either way, she wants to get to the bottom of what's happening. Vatelech Lidrishas Hashem. And she goes to inquire. And Rashi says she went to the Beis HaMedrash of Shem. Why does she go to the Beis HaMedrash of Shem? Because, and in fact, if we see the next pasuk says, Vayomer Hashem la. Hashem says to her. So how is that? Who's she talking to? She goes, Lidrashas Hashem. Rashi says she goes to the Beis HaMedrash of Shem. But then the answer comes back from Hashem. But Rashi says, yeah, the answer came back through Shem. And Shem is a Navi. Shem is Ruach HaKodesh. Vayoma Hashem lo, says Rashi, Ayide Shaliach, L'Shem Ne'emar. It was said to Shem, Beruach HaKodesh, V'hu Amar lo. So in other words, when she seeks out Shem, she wants the answer to be on the highest authority. And therefore she needs someone with Ruach HaKodesh who can basically inquire directly and get the answer she apparently, and understandably, she's not interested in a person's theories or suppositions or possibilities. She wants to know. So she goes to Shem. Shem will tell her. So then Mefarshim asks a simple shaila. If you're looking for someone with Ruach HaKodesh, I don't think anyone was better placed in history than Rivka to inquire of people with Ruach HaKodesh. She's married to someone with Ruach HaKodesh. And her father-in-law is Avraham Avinu, lives down the road, also has Ruach HaKodesh. So it's quite remarkable that Rivka, she needs a Navi. And in order to find one, she has to go somewhere. She doesn't have to go anywhere. She can just go to the study. And Yitzhak will be there. Or to the next house. And Avram will be there. And without, pardon the expression, belaboring the point, if it's a difficult pregnancy, that's not the time to travel. If it's difficult for just a movement, just whenever she goes, it must have been, it's a journey to get to Shema. Where are they? Where is Yeshiva Shema Ever? That's an interesting shaila. You need a Navi. How come you went to Shema? So the Gur Arye, the Maharal, gives a very straightforward answer to this question. And he says, Rivka doesn't know what's happening, but according to Rashi, she sees that there's something inside of her that's attracted to Avodah Zarah. And she's not sure what's behind that, especially if it's not clear that there are two children. So there may be something, even if there's one child, and somehow there's a, okay, when he gets to the Piskei Torah of Shem Ve'Ever, he also wants to get out. So maybe he has very diverse interests. But somehow he's also interested in Avodah Zarah. And where does that come from? Once again, we come back to the point of Tzadik ben Tzadik, Tzadik ben Rasha. If there's an Avodah Zarah inclination here, she doesn't know that maybe it's not coming from her. And that's not really the type of thing that she's comfortable then hearing from her husband. or from her father-in-law? Because if the answer is there's avodah zarah issues and unfortunately it's because of you or because of your background, so that could be uncomfortable. That could be awkward. Better to go to shame. He's a little bit out of the way. He's, of course, concerned for everyone, but he's not neither her husband nor her father-in-law, and she can hear it from someone like that. That's how the and it was worth a journey, as far as the Maharal is concerned. But the Maskil of David says something very interesting. Rabbi David Pardo, and that is that it's a delicate matter to receive information, especially from the outset. Who knows what the answer is going to be? And who knows what that's going to say about the future of her children? And as we can appreciate, if you hear from the outset, through Nevuah, about the future, so it can very easily complicate things. Because if that's the future and you already know it, so then that will affect the way that you act. And most people don't act with knowledge of the future. And maybe they're not meant to know. In other words, what we realize very quickly about the concept of Nevuah is that just because a person is a Navi, it doesn't mean they're capable of knowing everything that can be known through the medium of Nevuah. Not at all. It means they're capable of receiving Nevuah. But what is it they receive? What it is that heaven wishes to communicate. The fact that a person's a Navi doesn't mean they know everything in advance. They know what Shamayim want them to know. And they don't know what Shamayim don't want them to know. And the Nevuah is there the whole time. But it's Shamayim that decides what message comes out. As we can see very simply, Yaakov is a Navi. But he didn't know in advance what would happen with Yosef. And so on and so forth. And that's the way it's meant to be. All things being equal. So Rivka doesn't know what the answer is, but she does intuit. The less people who are personally involved with her children that receive the answer, the better. Because who knows what they'll hear, and who knows what they're not meant to hear. Maybe Yitzhak isn't meant to know. Maybe she's not meant to know. Maybe the Shem will say, I don't know, or I can't tell you. What's certainly true is that the more, let's call them, interested parties that receive the information or might receive it, the less chance it is that the answer will come out. Because who knows, maybe Avram's not meant to know. Maybe Yitzhak's not meant to know. And therefore, she goes to someone who, again, he's well disposed towards the family, but he's not her husband. He has no direct contact with Esav ever. As far as we know, and Yaakov will become his Talmud. But she needs someone who's neutral, in a sense, who there'll be no reason to withhold from him, and then maybe she'll also be able to get the information from herself. And in the event, that's actually how it turned out. Yitzhak was not meant to know. And it really becomes a major theme within Parshas Toldos, that Rivka has this knowledge, at least of the propensities and the inclinations and the tendencies of her two sons, and Yitzhak doesn't, not by force of Nevuah, and as far as we know, she never told him. She never told him for the very reason she thought that Shamayim might not tell him. So that was actually borne out, that intuition. And once again, these are very lofty themes, esoteric in their own way, but to try and understand why Rivka chose to go to shame to get the answer. She thought she's more likely to get the answer through shame than through Avram, than through Yitzhak, and even through Avram. Okay, so if we move towards the brachos themselves, and of course everyone has something to say about the brachos. Those big, the classic questions. Yitzhak chooses Esav somehow over Yaakov. And the particular approach that we will take is guided by the Sforno. And he starts with that question. It's black and white in the Psukim. Yitzhak decides that the brachos are to be given to Esav. Not to Yaakov, al shumma, based on what? And let's raise another a couple of more particular questions. If we're in Perek Kaf Zion now, which is where the build-up to the brachos is in Perek Kaf Zayin. And we see in Pasuk Dalet that Yitzchak has a particular request of Esav. He tells him to take his utensils, his tools, his hunting tools, to go out and hunt. Pasuk Dalet, va'aselim atamim, and make for me tasty food, kasher hafti, as I love. Va'avi'ali va'ocheila, bring to me and I'll eat. Ba'avur terechecha nafshi. So there is emphasis, there's specific mention of the that this is something that will somehow form the background or the lead-in to the brachas, this food that Esav prepares for Yitzchak. Yitzchak doesn't do this in order to get Esav out of the way. In the end, he ends up being out of the way, much to for Yaakov's works out well for him. But somehow Yitzchak sees this as a necessary prelude to the brachas. But why? The final pasuk of the perek, that is to say, perek kaf zayin, pasuk. Sorry, not the final, but just towards the end of Chamishi, perek kaf zayin, pasuk kaf zayin. So this is Yaakov now, but on a simple level, Yitzhak thinks that it's Esav. Vayigash vayishaklo. Again, somewhat esoteric these psukim. He approaches, he kisses him. Vayarach es reach begodav. And Yitzchak smells the scent of Yaakov's clothes, and we know that these are Esav's clothes, right? The pasuk told us, "Vayvarcheu," and he blesses him. "Vayomer," and says, "Rei reach b'ni, kureh sadeh asher berachah Hashem." See or choose the aroma, my son, like the aroma of a field that Hashem has blessed. I mean, that's very enigmatic. What does that mean? And then that leads into the brachas of V'yitin Lecha Ha'elokim. But how does that pasuk Kaf Zayin see the aroma or choose the aroma, my son, like the aroma of a field that Hashem has blessed? How is that the introduction to the brachas themselves? It's also interesting, actually, that between these two psukim, the name of Hashem changes. In pasuk Kaf Zayin, it says, once again, to see, Re'ei Re'ech B'ni, Kareach Sadeh Asher Berucho Hashem, Yud Kei Vavke, the Shem Havayah. But then immediately it says, V'yitin Lecha Ha'elokim. So that's also clearly a shift in connotation, and what is it? What is it all about? And the Sforno takes an approach which others will take also, the Orach Chaim after him and the Malbim, each with their own specific signature and variations. But it's one thing to say, says the Sforno, that Yitzchak doesn't know that Esav is an out-and-out Russia. Let's say that he doesn't know. But it doesn't mean that he thinks that Esav is the bigger tzaddik out of him. I mean, that takes some doing. It's one thing to have a benevolent vision or not to be aware of a person's wrongdoings. But ad kedei kach, he thinks that Esav is a tzaddik. He doesn't think Esav is the tzaddik over Yaakov. Rather, He understands. It's not for nothing. He sends Esav out to hunt. He's never sent Yaakov out to hunt for him. He knows that Esav spends his time in the field, and that's in the best case scenario. But but he feels that there's got to be room for Esav. There's got to be room for meaningful living, number one, for Esav's own life, and maybe even as part of the broader program of the future of the Jewish people. I mean, everybody needs logistics, everybody needs physical support. Maybe he can be that physical support. We see that the bracha that he's prepared for Esav is not the bracha of the leading tzaddik of the next generation. In the end of the parsha, when he calls Yaakov, and this is already in Perek Kaf Ches, just before he sends him away, he gives Yaakov a very different type of bracha. Birkas Avram, and L'rishtecha is Eretz Migurecha. He gives Eretz Yisrael to Yaakov. These were things that were not in the original bracha. This is the paramount and central bracha for the one who will continue Yitzchak's way. And that was never meant for Esav. Birkas Avram and Yerushas Eretz Yisrael. But there's got to be something for him. There has to be some type of meaningful physical living for him. And that's why he's looking to format Esav to allow him to rise to the occasion, to be deserving that his physical existence should have more meaning and ultimate meaning and fulfillment. And that's what the first thing he does is that he tells Esav to prepare food for him. In other words, this is Esav, shall we say, sublimating his hunting towards the fulfillment of Kibbutz HaBe'aim, right? In other words, to do something that Esav himself should precipitate receiving the brachas by using his physical capabilities for a higher purpose, for purpose of a mitzvah. And then, very interestingly, when the one who comes before him and he assumes that this is Esav, he begins to focus on the sense of smell. By Yarachas Begadav, and he encourages him to smell things. But what does that mean? Because the sense of smell, as we see in a number of places, represents, although it's physical based, you can only smell something if there's a physical basis where it's coming from, that may well be. But nonetheless, it's considered to be of the most rarefied of the senses, because you can't see it, you can't hear it, you can't touch it, but you breathe in and it makes a difference. So much so, in fact, that there's an area of halachas which is called birkas hareach, right? Special brachas to make over pleasant smelling things. What's the source for this bracha? It's not the same source as all other brachas. The sixth parak of Maseches Brachos discusses brachas before you eat and so on and so forth, and each one has its source. But the bracha over pleasant smells doesn't come from there. It actually comes from the pasuk in Tehillim, Kol haneshama tahalel ka. It's later on in brachas in Daf Mem Gimel. As the Gemara says, Ezeh davar shaneshama ne'enes mehem. What is it that the soul enjoys? Hevei omer zereach. It's a pleasant aroma. It's considered to speak directly to the soul, even though it's got to have some type of physical base. And from a certain point of view, the chush hareach, the sense of smell, represents exactly or encapsulates Yitzchak's hopes for Esav. In the same way that that what smell represents, it has a physical base, but it leads to a spiritually enhancing thing. Well, maybe that's what you can be like, Esav. Maybe, again, you also have a physical base. You're involved in physical things, but can they not be elevated? And how will they be elevated? If you can perceive the spiritual element within all the physical things you're involved with, then that is what will bring meaning to your existence. And that's why he says to him, Re'ei Reach Beni, always see, seek out the Reach, seek out the element, the higher element. Kereach Sadeh, for example, like the aroma of a field, Asher Berecho Hashem. And here he uses the name of Yudke Vavke. What is the difference between Yudke Vavke and Elohim? One of the primary differences between them is that Yudke Vavke is a name of Hashem outside of nature, really. That's why it's the name of miracles. Just before the miracles of the Ten Makos, for example, Hashem says to Moshe, Ushmi Hashem, lo nodati bahem. I was never known to the Avos in the way that I'll be known here with an absolute overriding of nature. That's Shmi Hashem. That's the name of Yudke Vavke. Elohim, which is much more natural, it's cause and effect, and that represents Hashem within nature. And this is what Yitzchak is encouraging Esav, again, the one who thinks, Rivka understands Esav is out of the equation altogether, but his plans for Esav, Yitzchak's plans, is Kereach Sadeh Asher Berecho Hashem. If you can see the bracha, even of Hashem as transcendent, above nature, but there's a bracha from him within nature, so then, V'yitin l'cha ha'elokim. Even as you interact with Hashem, more as Hashem within nature, Elohim, that should be a bracha for you. So it's a very interesting, you see the attention to detail, the names of Hashem, and all of these things that we don't stop necessarily. Why prepare food? And why does he smell his clothes? And what's the message for Esav? But according to the Sforno, it's all a progression. These were Yitzchak's hopes for Esav. Those hopes, as we said before, Rivka knows those hopes are in vain, partially because of the nevuah that she's received. But not only that, Rivka has an eye for a trickster, having grown up with Lavan. and therefore she sees through Esav just a little bit more, significantly more than Yitzhak. And so Yitzhak's brachas were not in vain, but they went to Yaakov, who Rivka judges not only will Esav abuse them, and therefore he shouldn't get them, but Yaakov needs them, and he should get them, which indeed Yaakov does. So Esav, post the brachos, very upset about all of this, and he voices, well, he doesn't voice, it says, Vayomer b'libo, but he already plots to do away with Yaakov. In Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Mem Aleph. Pasuk Mem Aleph. Vayistom Esav es Yaakov. Esav has a terrible enmity that he harbors towards Yaakov. Ala bracha shebracha aviv. On the bracha that his father blessed him. Vayomer Esav b'libo. And Esav says, who thinks, Yikruvui me'evel avi, that the days of mourning for my father, let them, what they will happen or draw near, va'ahargo es Yaakov achi, and I will kill Yaakov. So here's Esav saying that he's not going to do anything as long as Yitzhak is alive. Why not? It depends who you ask. Rashi says, Shelo atzaer es abba. He doesn't want to be mitzar. As we know, Esav's one mitzvah, kibud av v'em, he doesn't want to distress Yitzhak, and therefore he says, okay, I'll wait till the days of mourning for my father. I'm not going to do anything when he's alive. I don't want to cause him distress. Ramban takes a somewhat more self-preservationist approach. Esav doesn't want Yitzhak to curse him if he finds out that he killed Yaakov. So he just wants to wait till that's no longer a danger, and then he'll kill Yaakov. What's interesting is, Rivka is not relying on this. Here's and the pasuk says, Rivka heard. How does she hear? She said it in his heart. Rashi says, Ruach HaKodesh. Rivka is her own Ruach HaKodesh. Vayugada Rivka. It was made known to Rivka what Esav had said. And what does she do? She calls Yaakov and says, you have to leave straight away. And Mefarshim asks the question. I mean, if you got the whole message, he is saying that he's going to wait till their father dies. So it sounds like until that time, Yaakov is safe. But Rivka doesn't think that Yaakov is safe. She didn't say, I have a reliable information that as long as your father is alive, you'll be okay. Heaven forbid something should happen, leave immediately. She doesn't say that. She says, leave immediately. But what about Esav saying he's not going to do anything until Yaakov dies? Well, Ramban, again, gives a couple of answers to this question. It could be that, who knows when Yitzhak will die? I mean, Yitzhak himself didn't know when he was going to die at that time. He was 123, within 5 years of his mother, 127. So he doesn't know. That's why he chose that time for the brachas. He says, lo yadati yom mosi. I don't know when my end will come. He didn't know. Rivka didn't know. And who knows? So best not to wait. It could happen. Who knows when it will happen? And secondly, given the fact that it's Esav, so as much as Esav has been quite gracious, at least in his thoughts for now, but it could be that the sight of Yaakov would cause him to recalibrate his plans drastically, and maybe on the spur of the moment he would do something. It's best just to leave. But there is a fascinating, I'm not sure if he's the only one, and I saw this a good number of years ago, a fascinating approach to this pasuk. It's very interesting that what does Esav say in Pasuk Meman? Yikruvui me'evel avi. And what do we mean to say? As long as Yitzhak is alive, he's not going to do anything. But when will he do something? When Yitzhak dies. Why does he call that evel avi? It's true that if a person passes away, others are in mourning for them. But he's not waiting for the days of mourning. He's waiting for Yitzhak's passing. Why not very simply say Yikruvu Yikruv Misa Savi or something like that, which is more to the point. Yimei Evel Avi is it's almost like the emanation from that, but it's not the event itself that Esav is hinging everything on. Interesting, Shaila. Says the Bina Le'itim. The Rabbinah Itim Rabbi Azariah Fejo, one of the greats, the great Darshanim, it's a classic sefer of drushas, 75 drushas. He lived in Italy in the 1500s. And he says if you look at the beginning of Pasuk Mem Aleph, you'll see he's not afraid to look at this pasuk quite differently than both Rashi and Ramban. Vayistom Esav es Yaakov. Esav is harbors enmity against Yaakov. Why? Al bracha shebrachu al aviv. For the bracha that his father blessed him. We normally would express Esav's anger against Yaakov. What's he angry with Yaakov about? Because Yaakov took the brachas. But the pasuk doesn't say that he was angry at Yaakov over the brachas that he took. It says he was angry with Yaakov over the brachas that Yitzchak gave him. What's the intonation there? Says Abina Le'itim, Esav is very angry at Yaakov, but he's also angry at Yitzchak. In other words, he feels that after all he did, and as far as he's concerned, Yitzchak knew, especially when he came in, and Yitzchak says, oh, that was Yaakov, gam baruch yiyeh. Rashi says, kan chosam ala brachos. He feels that, contrary to his expectations that he's been cultivating over decades, really, Yitzchak in the end was happy with the fact that he gave the brachos to you. He feels that he made the right choice, because he didn't choose. But the way that things worked out, Yitzchak seems to be happy with that. And that has frayed things drastically. And you can even see, and again, Rashi quotes, Esav says, he's tricked me again. Yaakov has tricked me again. How so? First he took my bechora. And in spite of himself, and the pashtus is, he's standing in front of Yitzchak. And he's talking out loud. He says, of course he's called Yaakov. He's always tricking me. Took my bechora. Really? Took your bechora? What's that all about? And then Esav tells Yitzchak, well, there was this one time. How did you take your bechora? Long story short, I basically sold it to him because I was hungry. That's Esav. In other words, things have unraveled almost completely. And Esav kind of reveals his true nature finally to Yitzchak. And Yitzchak says, well, then he's the one. So, that means, says Abinu Le'itim, that Esav is interested not only in settling his score, shall we say, with Yaakov, but also with Yitzchak. How's he going to do it? Would he ever raise a hand against Yitzchak? No. So what can he do? There's only one thing he can do against Yitzchak, to kill Yaakov. In other words, according to the Bina Le'itim, Yikruvu Yemei Evel Avi, I will bring near the days of mourning for my father. Not that we'll be mourning over his passing. He will be mourning over Yaakov's passing. That's my score with him. And what about Yaakov? How will that work? Bahargas Yaakov. Quite a different approach to the psukim, and those are the two scores he'll settle vis-a-vis Yitzchak. I'll plunge Yitzchak into mourning quickly because I'm going to kill Yaakov soon. Well, if that's true, then you understand why Rivka tells Yaakov, "You got to get away straight away." He's not waiting for Yitzchak to die. He wants Yitzchak to be alive when he kills you, and that's sweet. So, really, big chidushim in terms of for us the chinuch. Is to pay attention to the nuances of the psukim to understand why the mafarshim explain the way that they do. So Rivka says, and with this we'll conclude, she calls Yaakov, and she tells him to leave. How long for? So let's see. And this is in the final psukim of Perek Kaf Zayin. Pasuk Mem Gimel. Let's start with Pasuk Mem Gimel and see. Atabani Shema Bekoli. Listen to me. I mean, this is the day that everything changed for Yaakov. Until that point, he's been sitting and learning uninterrupted. From this day on, nothing will ever be the same. He'll never see his mother again. She died before he was able to return home. get up, run away to my brother Haran. How long for? Pasuk Mem Dalet. V'yashavta imo yomim achadim. Stay with him for a few days. That's what yomim achadim sounds like. A little, a short while. Ad asher tashuv chamas achicha, until your brother's anger abates. Pasuk Mem Hei. Ad shuv af achicha mimcha, until your brother's anger abates. V'shachach es asher asisilo, and he forgets. I'll send for you and I'll call you back. Why should I lose the two of you on the same day? So, the Al-Sheikh asked a question. The truth is, you only need to hear that the Al-Sheikh is asking a question, and really what he's saying is, look at the psukim. Because she's basically described the duration twice. First in Pasuk Mem Dalet, and then again, in Pasuk Mem Hei, Hatshuva v'achicha mimcha. It's the same thing. But what does she mean to say? And that's why the Al-Sheikh explains that really, Rivka doesn't know how long Yaakov is going to need to be away for. In the end, here she's talking about Yomim Achadim, a few days. He was away for 20 years. It's more than a few days. And here she's saying a few days. What does that mean? But the answer is she doesn't know. Why doesn't she know? Because she doesn't know what type of anger this is with Esav. I mean, Esav is prone to any types of anger. And there's more than one type of anger. And it's for that reason, there's more than one word in Lashon HaKodesh for anger. Sometimes a person can be furious about something and then it blows over. And then it erupts and... And there's a few days where there's no talking to him. And then some people are like that. As Pirkei Avos says, there's some people, right? Noach lichos, the noach lirtzos, right? Temperamental. They'll get angry quickly, but they also calm down quickly. And they wonder why everyone around them is traumatized, because they're feeling completely fine. That's one type. But there's another type of anger which is really, really deep-rooted, and it doesn't go away. Or it doesn't go away quickly. It really, really... seeds and simmers. And that's the difference, says the Al-Sheikh, and this now becomes the Lashon HaKodesh question. One needs to look at all the psukim, etc. Af and chema are two different types of anger. And Rivka mentions both, because she doesn't know which type it is. You look at Esav now, there's no way you can tell. Chema is that type of... Chema is like cham, it boils over, and that can be a temporary thing. But af can take a while. Even Erech HaPaim in a good way, patience. It has endurance, that type of anger. And that's why Rivka basically gives both possibilities. And it could be either one, I don't know. It could be Pasuk Mem Dalet, maybe it's just Yamim Achadim. Because if it's Chema, as she says, Ad Asher Tashuv Chamas Achicha. Could be, but it could also take longer. It could be that he's this is not Chema, this could be Af. Right? Esav is impulsive, but it could be that this he's really, really taken to his core, and you will not let it go. That could take a while longer. And so much so, in fact, that don't come back before you hear from me, because I'd like to think that it's just Yomim Achadim. It could be much, much more. Do not come back until I send for you. How long that would take. And in the end, it did take a long time. And even then, it's not clear. 20 years later, when Yaakov's got to come back, And when he does, it's still not clear how he stands with Esav in the end. They hug and kiss, etc. But it's a very uneasy reunion, as we see from the Sukkim. But those are things, of course, to be discussed more at length in Parshas Vayishlach. But in the meanwhile, this is the day that, as we said, everything changed for Yaakov. He's off to meet Lavan, which will have is a sugya all unto himself, as is discussed in Parshas Vayetze. But we'll leave it over here for this evening.